Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt, and welcome to the Empire Podcast Deadpool Spoilers Special. Yes, it's the latest in our series of podcasts dedicated to discussing the minutiae of a new release. And joining me today to chew the fat over the phenomenally successful relaunch of Marvel's Merc with a Mouth are two Empire writers, the real heroes here, if you will. Helen O'Hara.
Hello.
And Johnny Pyle.
Hello.
How are you?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
I'm also well.
This is good, Johnny. There, a third writer, John Nugent, may or may not be joining us at some point during the podcast. The tension could not be any thicker. It really couldn't. Before we get into the spoiler special, let's hear, as is tradition, some spoilerific sass from someone who's involved with the movie. Again, a warning, if you've never listened to an Empire spoiler special, we discuss everything that happens in the film. So if you haven't seen Deadpool, if you are one of the four people on the planet who apparently have not seen Deadpool now, then stop listening to this. Go away, watch the film, come back, and then listen to this. That seems fair, doesn't it? That seems reasonable.
That seems entirely sensible.
Okay, good. Have they gone? Good. Are they back? Good. Even better. Right, so this is the an interview I did with the man who shepherded Deadpool to the big screen across 11 painful years. He's the producer of the film, and perhaps more importantly, the man who plays Wade Wilson and Deadpool, Ryan Rodney Reynolds. Now, sadly, we were up against it here, time-wise, so this isn't as long as our usual spoiler special chats. It's certainly not the three-hour Chris McQuarrie epic. It's about 10, maybe 11 minutes, but Reynolds is very, very funny and gave good spoiler about a great many things, including entertaining one of my personal theories about this film with good humour. Enjoy. We're delighted to be joined on the Empire podcast by Deadpool himself, Ryan Reynolds. I want to start off the spoiler section by talking about the very, very, very end of the film, which is the post-credit sting, which is perfection, the first quarter take. Was that the only option for you guys? Did you discuss other things as well?
Oh, yeah. We had a ton of discussions. I mean, we went so far as to see if we could actually cast and costume a Cable.
Oh, right.
And find some way to, you know, even just introduce him slightly. But, you know, we felt like the Ferris Bueller kind of feel or theme was so perfect for Deadpool, so perfect for its meta pop culture references. And we shot that in 5 minutes. I mean, it was just a we just plopped the camera down. I sort of studied how Matthew Broderick walked out, and we did a whole bunch of versions. I mean, some versions where I went into like a 3 minute Mel Gibson tangent. Another one, you know, they're all sort of, you know, we had different iterations, but we ended up settling on this this version. Now, did you see the full version? So you saw?
I hope so. I don't
so
know.
Did you see Deadpool come out, talk about we don't have enough money for a real tag?
Yes.
Go back in and then come out again and mention Cable?
No.
Okay.
I didn't see that. No, there you
so
go.
So now we're really
spoiling. I've got what's Cable and an Empire reference as well. So okay.
Well, because I think what they did was, does the spoiler thing go out before the movie comes out or after?
Okay.
What they did was they didn't show the Cable version. So actually, if you sit through the movie again, you will see a different tag at the end. You will see the same tag, and then you will see an additional piece. Deadpool pops back out again and says, "Oh, one more thing." And then explains Cable's role within the X-Men universe.
Yeah. Awesome. I remember the first time they showed Iron Man, they didn't show the Nick Fury sting to press either.
Of course, yeah.
So unbelievable.
Scallywags.
I want to ask you about how Deadpool fits into the X-Men universe. I have a theory. Now, obviously Deadpool breaks the fourth wall, but he does reference directly to Colossus, Patrick Stewart, and James McAvoy as Professor X. So my theory is this, and correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
That this movie takes place in the real world where the X-Men actually exist, and the movies we know as the X-Men movies exist in that world, which is why you can have Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart, and James McAvoy references.
Mind blown!
There we go. Nailed it. Or have I just made up?
Mind blown!
Wow.
Have I been overthinking
this? That's pretty good. You've been thinking about it, that's for sure. I don't know if you've been overthinking. You can't overthink that. That was just sexy, Chris. That is sexy. I feel a gentle shift in my khakis right now.
Oh. I do try.
Wow.
So right or wrong.
I don't even smoke, but do you have a cigarette? That's good.
Can't smoke in here, man.
No.
I know.
Oh, we're on camera.
It's not another. Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
That wasn't a denial. So did you think about how that fits into...
A little bit.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be honest, we just go for the sort of meta punch that the one that diehard X-Men fans and comic book fans in general are going to love. So
okay.
Yeah.
There's a point where Deadpool goes to the X-Mansion and makes a comment about the fact that he only ever meets a Negasonic Teenage Warhead and Colossus because he can't afford any other X-Men.
Yes.
How true was that?
Okay, it was very true, and I only said that in one take to make Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick laugh because we went through such hell developing the script and developing which X-Men we could keep and which we couldn't, and it just turned into such a nightmare. The studio would just say, too expensive to everybody.
Okay.
So finally we're like, what about Negasonic Teenage Warhead? And they were like, Negasonic what? And I was like, well, first of all, I'm quoting you because now that's a line in the movie. Negasonic Teenage, what the shit? And they said, well, yeah, sure, you can have Negasonic Teenage Warhead. She appears in one comic book. Like, we just own the name, you know? And the name is actually from a rock song, from a death metal group, I think.
Okay.
But so, that was just kind of a little throwaway to make the writers laugh, and it somehow ended up in the movie. Actually, gets a huge laugh with the audience.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It was fun. Yeah.
So how many discussions took place about other X-Men?
Pretty endless, you know? Yeah, we had Taskmaster was in the script originally.
Okay.
Too expensive. So there was lots of different, you know, we had versions where we wanted Hugh Jackman in there. We wanted all kinds of little cameos from different people, but it just becomes a big mess, you know, for the studio. They just start going, wow, schedules, money, everything, you know.
So why Colossus?
Well, Colossus had never really been done justice, I think, in the comic book. So for us, it was really about kind of getting an opportunity to put these guys up on the screen in a way that comic book fans expect, you know, and also just, I think there's something of a, we're quite religious about, you know, making sure that everything we do is canon as possible. Like even Deadpool's suit, you know, we wanted that to be the most faithful comic book to screen adaptation ever done. And you know, Colossus was no exception. We wanted Negasonic Teenage Warhead in the X-Men costume, the one that's in the comics. So, you know, all those things were fun for us. And we also just like that Colossus is like this incredibly righteous character who, you know, just works perfectly as Deadpool straight man. And we loved that. And, you know, it's also refreshing, I think, to have like the one Russian good guy in a movie ever, which felt good. So, you know, crushing that stereotype.
Right? Good point.
Yeah.
And of course, Colossus plays a big part in trying to persuade Deadpool to join the side of the Angels, which you reject fairly unequivocally at the end by Killian Ajax.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, in all pure Deadpool fashion. Yeah.
Again, was that tough to persuade a studio to do that, to have the hero of the movie kill the bad guy in cold blood?
I would venture a guess that the studio didn't read that far into the script. I'm not actually kidding. I just think that must have come up, and I produced the movie, so it would come up to me first. I mean, they would come talk to me and Tim and you know, see what we say. No one ever mentioned anything about it. So
okay,
it's possible they just, you know, supported the movie. I don't know. I mean, there are crazier things have happened.
But it feels absolutely right from Deadpool's point of view that is something he would do.
100%. Deadpool's a morally flexible person with superpowers. I wouldn't say he's a superhero. He's in, you know, but he's a morally flexible guy. You have to have that. I mean, if I got my way in the movie more, he would be downright, you know, he would walk that tightrope of just utterly detestable and the most enjoyable character you've ever met.
Which seems like a nice segue into the tiny hand.
Yes.
How tricky. I mean, where did that come from, the idea of that? And
that was just something that evolved. I mean, we had Deadpool cutting his arm off, and then, you know, I loved all these, like, these moments where he's, you know, flipping backwards on the bridge and you know, are you there, guard? God, it's me, Margaret. Like, all these, like, just hideous inside references to, you know, stuff that you don't really want to talk about in a superhero movie. You know, that just came from that. We thought, okay, it's the logical next step. You say, okay, how long is he going to take to regenerate? Like, we're going to put this to the test right now. He's just lost an appendage. What happens? So we just decided the timeline would be, you know, over the course of about 8 or 9, 10 hours. You know?
Okay. It's the first time I've ever seen a superhero masturbate.
Yeah, he's a ferocious masturbator in the movie. It's a gladiator-style contact sport. It's like a wild lion that's both hungry and horny all at once. Yeah.
Have you ever met a supervillain whose power was masturbation? Would Deadpool win?
Oh, for sure. Are you kidding me? And how do you know that's not one of his superpowers?
very true. Yeah. Very, very quickly, we've got to race through some very, very quick things. Careless Whisper.
Yeah.
Why Careless Whisper?
That's just one of the songs that was in the script from the get go. I think that was Rhett and Paul. I think that was okay. Something that they loved, and then I of course co-opted as my own as well, and just fell in love with it. And just a little stroke of genius, I think, from Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick.
And Stan Lee's cameo. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, Stan Lee's cameo. We ended up putting Stan Lee in a adult sort of a burlesque club, a strip joint, and I think it's one of the greatest Stan Lee cameos ever.
He's in his element. He looks like he loves it.
He really is. I wasn't sure if we extended his life by 20 years or we're going to actually critically injure him by having him stare at those women. But he seemed to have a good time. So,
and very last thing, where can Deadpool go next? I mean, you mentioned Cable. Maybe seeding that.
I think, you know, the natural sort of progression is Cable, X-Force, hopefully. I'd really like to see an X-Force. I'd like to see X-Force to go and be rated R as well and have the flexibility to do that stuff in there. You know, if Deadpool does what they want to do, then it affords you that ability to kind of do that. So, but there's it's 25 years of comics to mine from. There's lots to do. We have a story beaten out that we'd like to tell, and hopefully we'll get the opportunity to do that.
So you're working on a script or just a story beat at the moment?
We are on a script. We are well into a script.
But, fantastic. Yeah. I wish you all the best.
Thank you, Chris.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you
so
very
much.
It's a pleasure. Cheers. Thank you.
So that was Ryan Reynolds there talking spoilers and talking spoiler stuff, including the second Sting. And now, look at this. John Nugent has arrived.
Hello.
Hello, John Nugent.
Hello.
What was your excuse for being late?
Traffic, elephant and castle, tube, bus, train.
All those things.
Plane.
Elephants in the traffic.
All delayed.
It doesn't sound plausible to me.
Yeah, certainly not in London.
There's no traffic in London. Okay, so let's talk Deadpool. Now, we usually record the spoiler special way before the movie comes out. Because of various reasons, we're recording it now after the movie's come out, which has given us... It's actually a bit of a boon, because now we know that Deadpool, the movie, is a huge success, a phenomenal success. It has broken all kinds of records in the States. It is the biggest R-rated opening of all time. Of all time, it is the biggest X-Men-related movie opening of all time. It made, in one weekend, more money than the Wolverine made in its entire run in the States. It did also very well over here, I believe, in the UK.
Yeah, sort of. It's usually divide by 10 and replace the dollar sign with a pound sign. That's exactly how
That's
it did here.
That's exactly how it did here. I don't have the maths capability.
13.6 million
13
pounds,
million.
I believe.
Okay,
yeah.
There you go. That's that.
Which is very strong for the UK.
I could have done that.
Yeah,
probably. I could have figured it out. Divided by 10. I could have done that. But it's absolutely huge. It's something like the seventh biggest comic book movie opening of all time. It is bigger than all but three Marvel movie openings.
I think it's bigger than Man of Steel, am I
it's
right?
It's bigger than Man of Steel. It's a strange one. Robert Kirkman, the creator of The Walking Dead, a few weeks ago went to a fan screening and tweeted from it, I've just seen Deadpool, it's a game changer. And I kind of get what he was talking about now. What do you think the success of Deadpool means? Why do you think it was successful, first of all? And what does it mean going forward for the genre?
I think it found the right tone for its character, which I think is really, really important. And I think that's what the best comic book movies have done. I think that's what Richard Donner's Superman did. I think that's what Avengers did and the best of the Marvel movies. I think it's getting that tone right is everything. And I think what's interesting, I've read a lot of articles about the lessons that Hollywood is going to take from this success. One of the best of which is one I know you've read as well, Chris, the James Gunn Facebook post saying don't take the wrong lessons from this.
Yeah.
And that is really important. It's about finding the right tone for your character and not necessarily trying to Deadpoolize everything else.
And also communicating that tone through the marketing.
Definitely.
I think what a lot of people are saying is that the marketing for this film is among the best we've seen in a long time. And it really, the sort of character and the style and the humour of Deadpool really shone through, which is not something you see in marketing very often.
Especially for superhero movies.
Yeah.
Or super amazing, person movies.
Amazing poster that they released, which made it look like a romantic comedy, and it said Valentine's Day. True love waits or something
true
like that.
True love never dies.
True love never dies. Yeah. I thought that's genius. And you know, they had huge billboards in Los Angeles with this thing.
Yeah.
And that's and, very
and with
brave.
And with emojis and yeah. The film style.
Yeah.
I think it's really interesting. I mean, I think Ryan Reynolds really threw himself into marketing for this. I mean, I remember speaking to people when he was over here in the UK, and they said he's just working relentlessly. He's doing as much as he possibly can do to get the word out there, because he feels... He probably still feels evangelical about this character, but I think you're absolutely right that the marketing of this movie was fantastic, and it also went a long way to saying, hey, if you do remember this character from X-Men Origins Wolverine, we've got it right now.
Forget
we're,
it.
Yeah, we're doing okay. I think it's got a large part to do with the success. Johnny, what do you feel? Johnny wrote the Empire review of Deadpool, a 3-star review.
Which is a recommendation.
Which is a recommendation, absolutely. Helen and I are on the higher spectrum.
I would say so.
John Nugent, where are you on this spectrum?
I'd say I'm between a 3 and a 4, probably a high 3. 3.5, okay. 3.7.
Okay. Have you seen it with an audience? Has anyone here seen it with an audience?
I have, yeah. I have, yes. I saw it with a big audience, and it was very entertaining to see that crowd. They lapped it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it plays gangbusters. Mm.
I've seen it with 2 big audiences now. I've seen it 3 times in total. I've seen it with 2 audiences. One was a group of Deadpool fans who loved every single moment, and then there was an audience of Pain fans the other day. I went to see it on Friday night, opening night. And it was fascinating. So there was a large group at the front who loved every second. And then there were people next to myself and my wife who just were appalled by the whole thing. And just, it was almost like they needed permission to laugh. At some point, it was like, oh, is this, am I meant to be laughing at this?
And did they get into it?
No, not really.
Not at all.
A couple of times towards the end. I think it's impossible not to laugh at you shit spackled Muppet fart. Already he's going. But Johnny, what's your take on the success of Deadpool? What's that?
I saw it coming. Obviously, there was huge debates in the office, and I was saying, no, this will be bigger than the Wolverine. I said in one weekend.
Yeah. Do you know what? It does make you think that actually, of all the X-Men movies, the Wolverine would have really benefited from an R rating. Imagine, because everybody was kind of okay with it until that very CG heavy ending. Imagine if instead of that ending, you could have had just a blood soaked fight to the death.
With his cock out.
I mean, if that's what floats your boat, Johnny, then fine.
It is.
But we should probably talk about how badly they just screwed this character up. Just briefly, in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
I mean, there's a very simple way to show. I mean, he's the merc with a mouth, and his mouth was sewn up. I mean, you can't just. That's crazy.
Yeah.
It's like Batman with no bats. It's like Superman doesn't wear the suit, can't fly, and fights a giant spider at the end.
Who on earth would even begin to try and do
what
that?
What kind of an idea?
What sort of monster?
Yeah.
But when you go back and watch that film, which I don't try and recommend, it's absolutely awful. But the thing is, you can see just what a perfect fit for that character Ryan Reynolds is.
Yeah, that early scene where he comes in as Wade Wilson and cuts his way through an entire room with a couple of swords is cool. And you're like, all right, I got it. Yay, Wade Wilson. I'm having fun. And then everything else happens and the fun stops.
Yeah, you can actually see almost this... Kate Burley hashtag sadness in his eyes that does one for the international listeners as you can when he comes back at the end as Deadpool with his mouth sewn shut and I like the references throughout the movie to that first of all there's a Green Lantern reference in the opening in the opening credit sequence and then of course there's the cutaway to the Weapon X toy.
Yeah.
which I think is juxtaposed with a line saying, do you think that's as bad as it can possibly get? No, it can get even worse. It's something like that. I'm paraphrasing, obviously. And then there's a line where Agent Smith says to Wade Wilson, he says, you're going to show my mouth shut. And they say, well, no, we're not going to, that's not going to happen. It's just little references like that, I think, were very funny. And I feel in a way that Ryan Reynolds and Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick, in particular, those three were the keepers of the flame for this character. Yeah. And I know some people, we've had discussions in the office about some people were disappointed that this movie didn't push the craziness that far. That it's actually, when you look at it, a fairly conventional movie that just happens to have a character who is insane at its heart. But it doesn't, it breaks the fourth wall, but it doesn't push that. There's no Mel Brooks, Blazing Saddles-esque moment where the film becomes aware it's a film.
Not even a Gremlins 2 kind of bit.
Yeah, there's nothing like that. And I do wonder if they wanted to push it that far, but they couldn't. I think Ryan Reynolds hinted in the interview that there was still some studio interference, there was still some studio concerns about how out there this character was. I'd love to see where they go with the sequel.
Well, that's the thing. They now have, check to do whatever they like. Do you have a blank check to do whatever you like? I don't think you do.
I believe they have
like 10 billion.
I believe they now have Kate Blanchett.
This is the thing. So that at least they have somewhere to go with the sequel.
Yeah.
Because it'd be terrible if, having this opportunity now to do wonderful things with this character and push it even further, they were like, oh, well, we've kind of blown our load here. This is it. Like, what else do we do? And then they start to get into self-parody, but now they have somewhere for this character to grow, and I think that is a nice thing to have.
I mean, the film's only really two action scenes and a bunch of flashbacks.
What's the thing, actually, that the plot is almost not there. There's nothing to it. It's all about this character, and the character is what makes this the entire film compelling.
What was interesting, what didn't so much work for me, is the scenes where, the sort of romantic scenes, where we're learning about his relationship and that sort of backstory. Because those do seem very conventional, and I would have loved if there was a bit more sort of, I don't know how you break a fourth wall with romance, but do you know what I mean? It felt like the film got slightly bogged down by trying to give it a bit of seriousness, a bit of heart, when it could have just taken the piss somehow.
But then, well, I don't think it was a very conventional romance.
No.
I think that's,
Just to think about that relationship between Vanessa, who strangely is copycat in the comics and was depowered here, which is an interesting choice. I can see why they did
women
it.
Women in fridges.
It's not necessarily that, but I also do feel that...
I don't know what that means.
It's a comic book term. Women often get depowered or killed off.
It's not an Indiana Jones 4 reference.
No, it's not.
But I'm actually glad in a way that it did happen, because I didn't want what happened to X-Men Origins Wolverine, and to a lesser extent the Wolverine, to happen to this film, which is everybody's a mutant and everyone has a power.
Sure,
everyone does something. She does turn into a damsel in distress, which is a shame, because that character comes into it and their repartee is really sparky and raunchy and funny, and they have that really interesting meet cute, if you will. They are meeting. The parts of their body are meeting. That really lovely montage where they're just relentlessly pounding each other while, you know, we go through Calendar Girl. I really like that. And then Vanessa, her edges get kind of sawn off a little bit, and she becomes just another conventional damsel in distress who just happens to be a stripper or whatever she is.
She gets a couple more good lines at the end, but that's true, and she kind of disappears in the middle section.
She does, very, very much so. But
maybe Copycat can sort of come through in the sequel. Perhaps they can find some way to give her powers or something, I'm not sure.
Well, clearly now they're showing that, you know, anyone can become a mutant.
Yeah.
You know, you have latent mutant genes, which is an interesting way of opening up the X-Men universe. But I do feel that those nods towards conventional movie thinking must have been studio imposed to an extent. You know, that there's this feeling that you have to have heart, you have to have some sort of emotional integrity there to counterbalance the fact that, as we said, your lead character is a psychopath. But for me, while I enjoyed the Wade Wilson elements and while I enjoyed some of the flashback stuff, it almost feels in a way that you almost have to wade through that stuff to get to the Deadpool, pun intended, to get to the Deadpool stuff, which is so fun and so full of energy and so funny. This movie is funnier than most comedies have been released in the last couple of years.
That's true.
It made me laugh a lot.
A lot, a lot.
Do you not think, though, that you need those moments of almost quiet just to, like, catch yourself and start again? Otherwise, you're just going to be... It's just relentless.
I do wonder what it would be like if you had Deadpool for an entire movie.
People were calling it relentless as it is in some reviews I've read. So, you know, I think there probably is something to that. You need something kind of as a baseline. And I think, you know, John, what you were saying before, the reason that there wasn't a bit more Deadpool-y twist to the early love scenes is I think they were trying to limit the Deadpool-iness before Deadpool. You know, so you're kind of, I mean, they did leave in that one joke that everybody loved in the trailer about the green suit, but otherwise, you know, Wade Wilson is played pretty straight.
Oh yeah, Wade Wilson doesn't break the fourth wall at all until he becomes Melty Skin Man, and
he's only Deadpool.
Well, there's the green suit
though. Yeah,
he does say that before he goes under,
but he doesn't say it to the camera.
No, he doesn't. No, he doesn't set the camera tree.
So he, you know, he remains resolutely within the framework of the film until he becomes Deadpool. And in fact, during the montage where he's going through the group of goons in the attempt to get to Francis, who, I don't know if you noticed this, in his little serial killer FBI agent sort of framework that he has on his wall, which is, you know, leading through all the goons and henchmen towards Francis. I don't know if you noticed this. Francis is wearing a crown of dicks. I don't know if anyone noticed that.
I didn't notice that.
it's a little lovely little touch.
I think maybe I was just immune to so many dicks. They just passed me by.
In fact, Wade Wilson breaks the fourth wall a couple of times once he's Deadpool, without the mask, and that kind of threw me a little bit. But I almost wanted Deadpool himself under the mask just to do that. But that's just a personal quirk. But I love those. Otherwise, I love those moments.
So potentially this sequel And I realise we're speculating on a sequel that hasn't even officially been confirmed yet, but if it's post-Deadpool entirely, mm-hmm. we're not going to see any pre-mutation Wade, right?
Unless there's flashbacks.
Unless there's flashbacks, yeah, there could be more flashbacks. But I guess what I'm saying is potentially this sequel could be an entirely Deadpool, an entirely fourth wall break, and an entirely sort of fuck you movie.
Well, yeah. Obviously the second, and by second I mean later, introduced credit sting at hints at Cable. In fact, it doesn't hint at Cable, it promises
yes,
Cable.
Yes, it promises Cable, yeah.
Straight up, and there's already a fan campaign to cast Stephen Lang, who certainly looks the part.
Which is, I think, being led primarily by Stephen Lang.
I mean, probably,
at
yes.
At this point.
But at the same time, you know, who are we to argue? He's really large. We're not going to argue
you
with
him. You don't argue with the slang if he wants to take it out. But this is interesting. And so the idea that Cable, because obviously Deadpool and Cable is a comic book, they're a partnership in the comic books. Very funny, very successful one. Obviously, they have counterpoints, which work nicely against each other. But Cable in the movies is going to be an interesting one. And how this movie fits in with the X-Men movies, or should we say, now that this movie's been such a success, will the X-Men movies have to fit in with Deadpool? But
it does feel like a 7-movie prequel series just leading up to the main event now.
Well, the interesting thing obviously is so Cable comes from, in the X-Men's generally speaking, a potential future. He is the son of Scott Summers' Cyclops mm-hmm. and Jean Grey.
Madeline Pryor,
I apologise, who is, of course, the clone of Jean Grey. I mean, I can't believe I got that wrong. How embarrassing for me. He comes back in time to try and save his world.
So, very, very short recap of Cable. Nathan Christopher Summers, he is born to Scott Summers and Madeline Pryor. He is infected with a technovirus at birth. So, to save his son, Cyclops sends his son into the future where the technovirus will be cured, but it's not really cured, it's just abated. And so Cable has a sort of bionic arm and a weird eye, and then he comes back from the future years later as an old man, so he's older than Cyclops. So this is an awful lot of backstory to pack in for a character.
I think they probably just won't bother.
Yeah, they probably won't bother. But
it's a tale as old as time.
You know, boy meets girl, boy meets girl's clone, boy has son with girl's clone, son of boy and girl's clone get sent to future. I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, Shakespeare wrote it, that thing.
Yes, yeah. He did. Yeah, he called it Titus Andronicus. Yeah. Anyway, so Cable and Deadpool are very unlikely pairing in the sense that Cable is pretty serious, pretty focused,
yeah,
pretty straight.
Stephen Lang, essentially.
He's enormous as well.
Yeah, or Keira Knightley, as Ryan Reynolds says in the Sting.
Yes. I mean,
she's got range.
The two of them must compete so often for roles. So, it's a hard one to imagine. I think the interesting thing, of course, about this X-Men universe at this point, we've had so many different timelines, and we're only just getting to Apocalypse, which could introduce whole other realities and all sorts of craziness. And we just saw Colossus and mm-hmm. Negasonic Teenage Warhead,
yes.
who haven't been introduced in the X-Men films before. They could easily be added down the line, not to Apocalypse probably, because I think it's a bit too early for them. But
well, obviously Colossus has been in.
Colossus has been in, but this Colossus.
I mean, well, this is my theory, as I put to Ryan Reynolds, and he accused me of overthinking it. But my theory is, and go with me here, okay, that this movie, Deadpool, takes place in our world, where we exist in this world. You, me, maybe not Johnny.
Ben. Everybody.
Everybody.
And so do the X-Men movies. So Bryan Singer's X-Men movies, Hugh Jackman exists in this world, so does Patrick Stewart, James McAvoy, which mm-hmm. is why Deadpool can say that line to Colossus, "I'm taking you to see the professor." Which one, Stewart or McAvoy? These timelines are so confusing, because he's referring to the X-Men movies, which are based on the X-Men, who also exist in this world. So it's not quite our It's an alternative world. But anyway, so that's my theory.
It's not a
that's
great
my
theory.
It's a very good theory.
I mean,
it
so
holds
this means
up.
There are now three worlds, because there's the X-Men universe, the Deadpool universe, and then actually our universe.
No, because the X-Men universe is a world within our world. It's a made-up world within our world. So there's only two worlds.
What's the Deadpool universe then?
Well, the Deadpool universe is still made up. You know that, right?
Okay, so we're Earth 616, right? So this movie takes place in 617. All right, I'm just, you know, assigning it a random number.
Okay.
But so it's our world, but with one quirk. Mutants and the X-Men exist in that world. And then in this world...
That's a pretty big quirk.
Just go with me, Helen. And in this world, Hollywood has gone, oh, wow, hey, we've got mutants and superheroes running around. Let's make movies of them. Who can we get to play this bald guy who runs the X-Men? Patrick Stewart, who exists
in this
world.
That's a great idea.
Hugh Jackman can play the Wolverine, and everyone's going, but Wolverine in real life is 5'3". Don't worry, it makes perfect sense.
It makes perfect sense. Can someone get Chris a cup of warm milk and a blankie?
I'm not overthinking this.
I think you need your Inception totem just to double check you know where you are, Chris.
Why won't no one believe me? This is perfect sense. Which is why you can have a different Colossus. What I'm saying.
Okay.
Because the Colossus in the films is an actor played by Daniel Cudmore. But this is the real Colossus. Okay?
It's definitely not due to some contract negotiations.
Definitely not.
Or
he's gone full Joker. But, I mean, you know, Apocalypse is set in the 80s. This is clearly something modern day-ish. So, actually, there's 20 years between the two. And as we all know, all of the X-Men films previous to that, apart from Days of Future Past, were completely written out of existence last time. So, so it doesn't have to match up with anything except, you know, maybe
Apocalypse. But is the initial Deadpool in Wolverine Origins, is that not a problem?
No. It's written out of existence.
That's wiped out as well.
Mm-hmm.
How far back do we wipe out?
Like a long time.
It would seem so.
Yeah.
But how far?
To 1963.
And then everything's fine after that?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
Probably?
Yeah.
So. It is.
Kind of is. I mean, let's be honest.
It's not, though, is it?
Isn't it
the 70s we start again?
Maybe.
Let's be honest, until Simon Kinberg and Bryan Singer came back to the franchise, no one was keeping track of this stuff.
Well, and I think Simon Kinberg in the spoiler podcast for Days of Future Past essentially said that no one still is.
Yeah, it's because if you think about it, then
your brain explodes?
Yeah, my brain is exploding because the Wade Wilson we meet in X-Men Origins Wolverine, correct me if I'm wrong, is pre- Wolverine being turned into Weapon X. Again, we'd have to go back and watch the film, which I'm not going to do.
Which
means it's early 70s, right? Or
No, because Wolverine hasn't been picked up. Oh yeah, by Stryker.
Because
in Days of Future
Wolverine
Past.
Goes.
No, but we see them in Vietnam, don't we? Or thereabouts, and this is pre-Vietnam.
Okay.
Cuban Missile Crisis. Oh wait,
that's
after that.
First class.
Damn.
Days of Future Past 73,
you're right.
That's at the end of Vietnam.
Yeah.
It's all very confusing. Stop making it up as you go along. Have a big wall chart, guys. That's the best way to do these things.
I need an infographic.
Put a crown of dicks on someone and some pieces of red string.
You could put a crown of dicks in any character in the X-Men universe. No, that's not what I have written down. But you talked earlier on, Helen, about getting the tone of this character absolutely right. And I think you're right. This does it. I think Ryan Reynolds is absolutely born to play this character. It's one of those Tony Stark, Robert Downey Jr. situations where it almost... I'm not saying Ryan Reynolds is psychopathic in real life, but he gets the sense of humour. He is the sense of humour.
He's very quick and very funny. He's the kind of guy, he's talked about this in interviews in the past, when he goes to karaoke, which we all did last week, but when he goes to karaoke, he inserts random swear words into the middle of songs, like Wilson Phillips songs, not, you know, Beastie Boys songs or something where it would fit. And that's kind of the attitude you want for Deadpool, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. He gets creative swearing.
Yeah.
He could almost be Irish.
And compliments don't come a lot higher than that.
His swearing is so shit-swillingly creative.
He told you on last week's podcast that he ad-libbed a lot of his lines, right? He wrote his own dialogue for a lot of the swearing.
So shit's back up Muppet fart, which is just one of my favourite lines of the year, just hands down. Tiny hands like a KFC spork, like David Beckham mouth fucked a can of helium. I mean, this film is full of quotable but ear muffy lines. I have to say, I think the scene between Deadpool fighting Colossus on the bridge is one of the funniest things I'll see this year. Bona fide comedies will have to work very, very hard to be funnier than that. The bit where he pats Colossus on his crotch and goes, "Dad," then he punches him in his crotch and goes, "Oh, your poor wife," just destroyed me. Absolutely destroyed me. So I want to see more of that in a sequel.
I want to see more of Colossus's crotch.
Chrome cock in
a crown of them.
A crown of chrome cocks. This podcast is rated R. We've gone full red band. But yeah, I just want to see more of that interaction with other superheroes, because Deadpool is someone who does not respect reputations, and I think that could be really fun.
True.
But anyway, going back to the idea about him nailing the character and nailing the tone. the end of the movie just rammed home for me just how perfectly this movie got this character. Because do you remember the furore at the end of Man of Steel when Superman kills General Zod and it was completely against character, blah, 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 blah. And this movie goes the other way. It has a character trying to persuade Wade Wilson not to kill the bad guy, and then he just goes ahead and kills him. And that just felt perfect to me. It's almost part of you going, weirdly rooting for your main character to shoot this guy in cold blood.
I think whether it's a strength or a weakness of the movie, the bad guy is irredeemable on a number of levels.
So what do we make of the rest of the characters in the film? Because obviously Deadpool does dominate.
Mm.
But did we like Ed Skrein as Ajax? Ajax?
I think
Ajax of Amsterdam?
I think, despite what I just said, I think he has a role, like a plot role to fulfil in the film, which is to stand there and be a bit evil. And that's all he has to... No, genuinely, that's all he has to do. There's the little bit with him having something in his teeth, which almost is a comedy beat for him. But basically, he is meant to be there to be just straight and horrible and give Deadpool something to bounce off. Mm. And in that sense, he does well. Is he going to go down as one of the great villains in history? 100% never. However, you know, as a kind of plot role, I guess he does okay.
I think often in superhero movies, you want a villain that's as big, if not bigger, than the superhero. And in this case, maybe you don't. I think Deadpool is too big a character to have an even bigger villain, because there's too much going on with this hero. And he also, he's not essentially a hero. I mean, he's an anti-hero. So, you know, it's like you don't want a good versus evil, because he's not exactly good, is he?
I agree.
I mean, the important thing about him is he seemed like almost an insurmountable challenge for a long time. He was, you know, difficult to hit with the bullets. He was. It looked like, you know, I am sure Deadpool's going to win here, but you know, within the confines of the film, I thought that possibly, like, you know, Deadpool might not win, and that is what he needed to be.
Yeah, I think I did have a bit of a sort of a logical problem, I guess, with his abilities, in the sense that just because he can't feel pain doesn't mean his muscles should still be working. You know, he may not feel anything, but wouldn't his lungs still be filling with blood from that sword through the shoulder?
Yeah.
So, you know, I had a little bit of a kind of
it's the same
reaction
thing,
to some of that.
I have the same problem with fast running zombies. It's like, if you snap your Achilles tendon, it doesn't matter what happens, you're not going anywhere, because you won't be able to move your leg. And I kind of was feeling that. He gets like an axe. I mean, Deadpool obviously can heal, which is a bit of an Achilles heel of the character in a way, that he can take so much punishment. I mean, although it does lead to some very funny moments when he gets stabbed in the brain and hallucinates all those cartoon characters. But, you know, so you have an unkillable hero, but you also have a bad guy. You can just shoot him in the face.
Mm-hmm.
And which he does, obviously, in the end.
Indeed.
But yeah, I was slightly disappointed with the lack of character from the from the bad guy. I thought Ed Skrein was perfectly fine, and the fight at the end was great, but they just needed a little bit more work on the actual
character.
Maybe
so. Gina Carano as well didn't get much to do.
No.
There's the nice couple of moments between her and Colossus, but otherwise it was a bit of a nothing henchman. The Colossus bit was really good, though.
Well, when she comes untethered.
Untethered,
yeah,
yes. She has a wardrobe malfunction.
You are a very beautiful woman.
I thought actually the best character was the taxi driver. I didn't think it was the best taxi, but I thought, like, he hasn't been mentioned anywhere.
But yeah, no, that was a nice little beat. Although, the idea that he would come back to pick up a passenger again who previously paid him with a crisp high five seemed a little far-fetched.
I mean, that's just how important a crisp high five from Deadpool is. I think you'd come back for another.
I would actually go back for a crisp high five, yes.
Yeah. Well, Deadpool changes the course of his life. Maybe not for the better.
Well, does he die at the end? What happens?
No, he doesn't die.
No, he drives off.
He crashes, though, doesn't
he? He crashes with his cousin.
Yeah,
who is
in the boot,
and you get the impression his cousin's been badly wounded at least. But Dopinder's going to go to prison for a very, very long time.
Maybe he won't. Maybe he will explain that he was giving his cousin a lift, and that his cousin has a fetish for riding in the boot.
I think his cousin might say otherwise.
But his cousin is badly injured. Maybe he can't talk anymore.
Oh, so you're actually rooting for his cousin to die?
No, that would be wrong.
Helen, you're sick. Kidnap her.
Kill him.
I love that sequence. Yeah, I think that sums up the differences between Deadpool and other superheroes. I've already seen a sort of supercut, a gif or a gif, if you will, on the internet of superheroes flying and swinging through the city and then Deadpool in a cab at the beginning, which I really like. Just, you know, just to sum up, the man lives in a, let's be honest, a shithole as well. It may have IKEA, but it's a shithole. And he feels very different to me than most other superheroes.
Yes.
Not
which
me.
Is good.
No to Johnny.
No. Just another run of the mill.
There is one thing that many, many superheroes seem to have in common, and that is they can all sew really well. Mm. Like with heavy duty fabrics, which they somehow find at their local haberdashery. Mm. So I guess he has that in common with, say, Spider-Man.
But I feel that in an X-Men Marvel universe, there is probably something like certainly a small industry set up to, so you go in with your and pick sure. out swatches. And
so it's then a sort they, of a Kevlar haberdashery.
Yeah, because okay. I mean, we don't have that, or maybe we do. I can't remember what Chris's theory is about what universe we're living in. So we don't have that.
We're in 616. They're in 617.
So in 617,
yeah,
then possibly I, that industry has okay. sprung up where it hasn't here.
Wait a second. If we're in 616, that means that superheroes live in our world. So we're not.
No, we're not
in 616.
616.
We're 61. We're six. We're 61. Okay, we're 617, and this movie takes place in 618. I've got some questions here, very, very quickly.
Let's do that.
I've got some questions. This is from Amon Warman, who says, "Which other superheroes, past or future, would you like to see R-rated cuts of? Who would you like to go see?"
Well, isn't the point that none of them? And it's about the turn, isn't it? Are we asking this question sensibly? If we're answering it sensibly,
yeah.
then this is the problem with... This is potentially a problem with all the different iterations of Superman that we've seen. This is certainly a problem with late 90s Batman, mm-hmm. that you know, they lost what the tone of that character should be. And so this character works well as an R, but mm-hmm. potentially, you know, other ones wouldn't, although we have already talked about Wolverine being
yeah,
a hard R.
I think Wolverine could be.
I think the Wolverine should have been. Yeah. I agree with you completely on that. It's a character that there have been Wolverine Max comics. There have, you know, I think we should you know, you should absolutely just go all out with that character. It's always felt not all out, but yeah. you know, it's always felt a shame to me that his claws have felt slightly sheathed throughout the movies. But it's a very interesting point because already overnight there was a confirmation that a new R-rated version, hard R, super hard R version of Todd McFarlane's Spawn is on the way. But we should also consider that this is not a revolutionary film. This is not the first time it's been an R-rated superhero film, as anyone who's seen any of the Punisher movies will know, including the spectacularly violent Punisher Warzone. He's a vigilante, but it's not like this is a complete game changer in that way, nor is it a game changer, as James Gunn pointed out, in terms of humour in superhero movies.
Definitely not.
Because people are now acting as if there's never been a funny superhero film before. And James Gunn, the writer and director of Guardians of the Galaxy, which is hilarious, quite rightly took to the internet yesterday and went, hello? Hello?
Hi, you guys!
You could trace a line, perhaps, between Guardians, which mm-hmm. is a film based on a comic book that nobody reads. Deadpool's a much, much more successful character. That coming out and doing incredibly well because it was funny and entertaining, and Deadpool being green.
Exactly. Yeah.
Possibly. I mean, obviously, we know it's because of the test footage as well, but I'm sure Fox looked at that and went, oh, hang on, there might be something in this. Although nobody was expecting this. All right, more questions. Simon Johnson says, reports that Deadpool's a budget close to $60 million. Is this a signal for big studios to be more frugal with high-profile films, or is this an outlier?
I think there is something to be said for trying to make some slightly more mid-budget superhero movies, which there have been. I think the first Captain America was pretty cheap. Relatively, oi, how dare you? don't even come at my cap like this. All right.
No.
Anyway, so I think there is something to be said for not always trying to up the last one in terms of action and so on. And that's something that you'll hear writers and directors talk about a lot. We don't want to, you know, okay, I'm talking about Captain America again. We don't want to try and make a bigger explosion this time. We want to have more character development. We want to have higher emotional stakes. And there is something to be said for that, and I think they should go for that more.
I think it is an outlier in one sense. You pointed this out in your review, Johnny, that...
Probably.
It's an unusual superhero movie that does not try to save the world. It's got fairly low stakes. I mean, the stakes really are, I just want to get revenge, kill the guy who did this to me and save my girlfriend. You know, it's not, I've got to save the world. And so you don't need, like, ridiculous CGI with an entire city being blown up. It can just happen on a car park or wherever it was.
Which is great.
And it follows in the footsteps of Fat Man in that way, which ended up with two people fighting on top of a toy train. And the world was not at stake in any way, shape or form.
Yes, it does.
But I also think this movie, the success of this movie, and I've seen some think pieces about this already, puts to rest the fallacy that there is superhero fatigue. I've said this for a long time on the podcast, that if the films are good, they will succeed, which is why Marvel movies do so well. Because by and large, they've been very, very good. And it's why perhaps Man of Steel, which isn't, in my opinion, a great film, did
or even a good one
at the box office. Or a good one, or or even an average one. But if the films are terrible, then yes, people will get bored of them. If they can, which is why Fantastic Four flopped.
Yes.
If they do well, if they're great, then people will go and see them.
Yes.
It's that simple. I feel like I'm taking crazy pills here. Some very, very quick questions from Mark Fawcett. One quick question. He asks about a helicarrier.
Yes.
Now, this question came into us last week, and he said, helicarrier, how did that come about? As it looks remarkably like the Marvel films, was there some negotiations with them to get it in the film? So at the end of the film, the fight takes place on a massive ship. It looks to me like an aircraft carrier, but then I saw it again on Friday night and was looking specifically to see if it was a helicarrier. And you know what? That thing has turbines.
Yeah, it does.
That thing has turbines. So, does it take place in Earth 619?
Oh my goodness. Oh, okay. No. But I do wonder, I mean, is that kind of thing included in people's licensing agreements?
Well, here's the thing. I think it's just close enough to a helicarrier for people to go, is that a S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier?
Mm.
But noticeably, it doesn't have any S.H.I.E.L.D. branding. It doesn't look like the ones from the Marvel movies. It perhaps looks more like ones from the comic.
Yeah.
So I think it's just close enough not to contravene any legal arrangements, but for people like us to go, oh, what does that mean? Or is it this movie going, ha-ha, you and your S.H.I.E.L.D. and your helicarriers, that's all old and outdated and outmoded, and we're all about the new, man. Because it's rotting. It's a rotting pile of junk, isn't it? Yeah.
So that clears that up.
Yeah, it clears it up. It's some smack talk from Deadpool. That's what I think it is. Right, that is it. Wish we could talk a lot more about this film, but time is against us, as always. And that is it for a Deadpool Spotted Special. We didn't even mention Stan Lee. Very funny cameo.
Very good cameo.
Very good cameo.
So that's done.
Well done, Stan Lee. Join us every Friday, if you wish, on the podcast for regular film-related fun. Our next spoiler special is likely to be Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice, a movie whose heroes are likely to break all the walls. Until then, it's goodbye from John.
Goodbye.
It's goodbye from Helen.
Toodaloo.
It's goodbye from Johnny.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me. I'm off to fix a random crown of dicks to someone in the Empire office. I'm not going to say who. All right, Johnny. See you next time.